Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, here with my co-host Manny for the Geek Saga Show series, The Media That Made Us. This series focuses on media that the two of us consumed in our younger, or maybe even just slightly younger years, media that helped shape our current interests and that we still love.
So I'm Manny, and for our 11th Media That Made Us episode, we're continuing our coverage of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series and discussing the Arc of Despair, which includes BSG Season 4, Episodes 11 through 18.
Before we get started, just a heads up that you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at A Geek Saga on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube.
And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Bendisimo Art.
Just a couple other house cleaning items before we dig in. If you're watching this as a webcast on Facebook or YouTube, pretty please make sure to hit those like and or subscribe buttons. And if you're catching the audio only version on your favorite podcatcher, we could really use some more ratings, especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and would super very much greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to mark the Geek Saga podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening. Last but hopefully not least, we hope that you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon. We have a lot of tiers, with just $3 per month getting you the most prevalent perk of early access to podcast episodes. You can check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Our format for this Media That Made Us series includes our top 5 moments that made it. Basically, our hot takes from the portion of the series we're covering, followed by any insights we've uncovered from rewatches and or being longtime fans, with our first top 5 moments of this arc of despair.
Well, Manny, first up from the episode, Sometimes a Great Notion, we have... You get a Cylon reveal, and you get a Cylon reveal, and you get a Cylon reveal. We have to be not serious with these as much as possible, because this is a very serious episodes. But basically, after setting down on Earth and it being destroyed, they take some samples and they realize that the Earth they discovered was entirely populated by Cylons, which apparently means that, duh, Cylons were the 13th tribe. And then, bonus, Ty goes swimming in the ocean, and this kicks his memory into overdrive, and he recalls that, of all people, his wife, Ellen, is the 5th member of the final 5. It's a lot. It's a whole lot.
It was certainly a lot. I mean, it was a good reveal. I'll say that. Yeah. The way it was done, poor Ty having to jump in whatever Canadian water that was, you know, that was frozen. You can tell all over him when he's doing it.
It's like just south of Vancouver. I don't know when exactly they filmed it, but either way, the Pacific Ocean is freezing here middle of summer. So
I really did like the concept of the 13th tribe being all Cylons. Like, it was different, which fits into the 13th tribe, because it's always spoken about like with this mystery, you know, like there was something different about it. So I do like the fact that it was all different. And all Cylons, like something different. I did, but kind of didn't like, appreciated the entire exposition dump that Anders went on when he's sitting in the hospital bed, because it's like, guys, we got to wrap this up. We have like 5 or 6 episodes left. We need to. So they just kind of dumped it, and just so we can move on. Like, okay, so here's what happened, guys. Like, here's the story. And they kind of told everything. It was cool, but I felt like it was just kind of a lot at once. But I did appreciate it at the fact, because remember, we've been chasing the mystery of the 13th tribe since the beginning. It's kind of like when Neo sees the architect, right? In the Matrix, it was like that exposition dump where it was like, okay, cool. I'm glad that we know now what it is. But
I guess at least they gave like a reason for him to be giving the exposition dump. He was shot in the head, and everything that happened, like with Ty, it kicked his memory into overdrive. I do have to say, before we get into the Ellen stuff, so the idea of, we know that there were, let me do my math, 13 Cylon models, right? There's the 8 and then the 5. And we also know that they had trouble figuring out how to procreate. So that means this planet was entirely populated with, like, I guess, millions of the same 13 people, looks wise. That's a little bit weird.
That's a little weird. That is kind of weird, because they're identical, you know, and it's like, is this my girlfriend? I don't know.
Yeah. That sort of thing happens later in this episode. So
yeah, we'll get into that one later.
But other than that, it was an interesting reveal for sure.
It was an interesting like reveal, and I did like how they did the flashbacks and stuff, because it was cool to see that life on the Cylon planet was pretty much just a normal Earth or whatever. You know, they were just normal people. They just have different blood, that's all. And they're robots, kind of. But what's the human body than just a biological robot, guys? I mean, come on, let's be real here. You know what I'm saying? So moving on to Ellen, right? So Ellen being the final Cylon makes sense to an extent. It makes sense in the sense that she's somebody that it's like they were trying to subvert expectation. They wanted to do something different because at this point, Ellen was gone. We kind of forgot about her and thought that her story was kind of told and that was it. So we were just like, okay, which one is it going to be? Is it going to be Adam? Is it going to be Kara Thrace? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Hot Dog? We don't know. We're just waiting around hoping that it's Hot Dog, but you know, we don't know what's going to happen. Right? But when they revealed it, I wasn't as like surprised as I was with Colonel Ty hearing the song or like the chief hearing the song and the way it built up. The reveal was good. Don't get me wrong. Like the reveal of Ellen was actually done very well. However, for me, it was just more of a, huh? What? Wait, really? Ellen? Okay. Yeah. I mean, all right. I mean, at this point, we really don't know what to expect with anything because there's characters that come and go and disappear and get sucked out of the airlock. So I think at this point we've become accustomed to just not really following what we think is going to happen. Like, okay, they're going to do something different. But I do feel that the reveal was kind of less than stellar. And it was like, and it was multiple reveals. It was like, hey guys, you know, let's reveal Ellen like four or five times now, you know? And I love Kate Vernon, the actress who plays Ellen. She's fantastic. I love the Ellen. No one could have played that character. She's fucking great. She has that wonderful chaotic energy that I love.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I honestly do think that it would have been more fun for the Ellen reveal to be her waking up in the vat of goo rather than Ty remembering that it was her. I understand why they did it the way they did, but at the same time, it would have been really cool to just have all this thing and they still don't know who the fifth member of the Final Five is. And then beginning of the next episode or whatever it is, it's Ellen just out of the goo vat over here. That said, I got the major squicks during her first conversations with Cavill and hearing that she made him in her father's image and remembering that the two of them had an affair on New Gavrika. Like, gross. I know that she didn't remember who or what she was at that time, and neither did he. But still, I don't. In your father's image, too. There's some, it's not quite edible, but I don't like it. I don't like it.
Exactly. It's like, I don't want to go home now. Like, I was just like, no, I don't like it.
Oh, Lord, I don't want it. Lots of Cylon news these episodes.
Yes.
But that said, we have several more things.
Yes.
I'm already just like,
okay. The next top moment comes from the episode, A Disquiet Follows My Soul. It's truly a special one for us as hosts and for anyone who has been keeping up with our BSG discussions, because it turns out that in the case of approximately 2-year-old Nikki, Chief, you are not the father.
But Manny, what did the paternity test determine? Who is the father?
The paternity test shows here that it was actually Hot Dog.
Yes. I can't fucking believe that we did not remember this plot point.
None of us did, dude. It was like a blank.
All of our hot dog nonsense. I'm tearing up again. Fuck. All of our hot dog nonsense the past couple episodes, and neither of us remembered.
Dude, I did not remember that when you had texted me and you were like, dude, the chief's not the father. And then I was like, oh, well, that would make sense because we were just talking like in the last episode about
how weird it was that, they weren't focusing on Nikki being a half Cylon.
And you said you weren't the father. And then I was like, oh, that's right. He wasn't the father. It still didn't dawn on me. And then you were like, guess who is the father? And I'm like, oh my God, it's fucking Hot Dog.
Yes. In all caps, because I'm literally sitting there, tears falling from my eyes. I'm laughing so hard. And it's been a long time since I have laughed that hard, but my God.
Okay, so Hot Dog didn't get to be a Cylon, but ladies and gentlemen, let's tell him what he won. He got Parenthood, the home version. I feel like they really tried to like shoehorn him into a lot of situations in this. I get it. He's Edward James Olmos' son. We got to get him to like do something. Very well couldn't have been just some rando who knocked up Callie or anything. It had to be fucking Hot Dog. And you know, it's great, dude, because Hot Dog just doing what he does best, dude, hot dogging. I can imagine him. He probably had sex with her by accident. Okay. He probably just went to like use the restroom. And then Callie was there and was like, oh no, I gotta get mine. And he was just like, oh okay. I guess we're having sex. Let's do this. But in saying that, they had to do this. They had to do this because, like we had spoken about in the last one, about how they didn't talk about the fact that Nikki was quite possibly a Cylon human baby also. They had to write, because if Nikki was, then it was going to negate the entire concept of Hera to begin with. So in essence, they had to write this baby out, is what it is. And they didn't want to murder it. Everybody else had been getting murdered. They're like, no, we just need to just write it out of the story kind of nice and cleanly. At this point, the writers had so much blood on their hands that they're just like, we just got to do something different. But either way, you know what? Hot Dog's legacy is going to live on now forever now.
He said that the writer, like, they got enough blood on their hands. Like, the writers just had to kind of get this whole thing out of the picture, this child out of the picture. But I got to say, and Dean and I were actually talking about this earlier, I get that Chief is a Cylon and that he's upset about how he's being treated because of that. And he's also got a fuck ton going on, like he's trying to save the Galactica, et cetera, et cetera. But he does just basically dump Nikki on Hot Dog without any remorse. Yeah. And now that I'm recalling all of this, I'm almost entirely certain, and Dean confirmed that I was right about this, that Chief really just does totally dump Nikki for good. What the fuck, man? Okay, I get it. This kid isn't your child biologically, but you've been raising him for 2 years-ish, give or take. I tried to look up timelines and do some math. The shortest amount of time I got was that he's like maybe 15 months old. The middle ground is like 18 to 19 months, or he's about 2 years. I'm going to go with, by the way he looks, that he's probably more like 18 months. I'm not good with babies. I never had them. So I could be wrong there. But
I really thought it was going to be some kind of like joint parental thing. Because you remember when he sits Hot Dog down, he's like, you're going to stay here. And he's like, how long do I wait? He's like, until I get back. So I was like, okay, you guys are doing double duty now. We got my two dads now. I'm loving it. This is awesome.
Man. Honestly, yeah. Maybe the writers, et cetera, thought that those lines would be proof that that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. But then as far as I remember, and like I said, Dean seemed to have the same thought that even when they get to New Earth or whatever you want to call it at the end of the show, like, listen, I get it. I don't expect that Chief is going to be BFFs with Hot Dog. Not quite the my two dads situation. Well, certainly not that level of my two dads, but even just, my bio dad and the guy who raised me for 2 years and is going to continue to be my life dad are going to be friends, or at least friendly acquaintances, and help raise me together. But there's just no evidence anything like that happened.
Really, I think it's just done after that. Like, yeah, it's exactly. Never anything. I always saw it, or how I would have liked to envision it, is that you have Hot Dog who's trying to be a father, and then now you have the Chief who's being a father figure to Hot Dog, kind of teaching him.
I don't know that they're that much different in age, but
no, not that much different. Yeah. And also the Chief beating up Hot Dog. Come on, dude. That was like before you guys got together, and he didn't know he was the fucking father, apparently. So it's like,
I guess it was before they got together. I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm going with, as much as I don't really love, I never really loved Callie. I know that she got pregnant before her and Chief got married, but then I also saw something that referred to it as her having an affair with Hot Dog. And it's like, okay, so are you using the old timey version of affair? That's like, oh, anybody you sleep with outside of wedlock is an affair. Or is it our version of affair where you were with Chief and had an affair with Hot Dog? I'm going to go with, like, they probably meant the former, but it timing wise seems like it would be the latter. I don't know. I guess it doesn't matter in the end. Like, she's dead. And even if it was a full on cheating situation on Callie's part, it does seem like you raised this kid for like 2 years, man.
Didn't Doc Cottle tell him, though, that it was before they got together?
Maybe. I
think Doc Cottle said something like that.
And that's the thing. Like, what was it, before they got married or before they got together entirely? I don't know. It doesn't really matter, but.
I wish I was better at Photoshop, because I really wanted to do the Maury Povich when he's sitting in the thing with the thing, but I wanted to superimpose Doc Cottle's face over him. That's what I wanted to do.
You should have just changed your lower third here from Manny to Manny Povich for this.
Manny Povich, exactly.
Oh man.
But in the end, that was the gift that just gave. Hot Dog gave it to us. You know?
He is the gift that keeps on giving.
Keeps on giving. And I was like, this is exactly why I didn't know what was going on, but my brain did. My brain was gravitating towards Hot Dog, and I didn't know why. But here he is, dude. Hot Dog forever, man.
Well, I don't know how much more fun we're gonna have in this discussion.
Yeah, guys, so we're going through the tunnel neck and then Willy Wonka when they go through the tunnel, you know, like that's where it was all happy and fun here, and now we're going through the dark is where we're going. So
yeah, because spanning several episodes, because some of what happens in A Disquiet Follows My Soul leads to the events in The Oath and Blood on the Scales, we have, for our third top arc of despair moment, an ill-fated insurrection.
Hear me out on this, because I'm fixing to take a shit on someone. It's an unpopular opinion, no doubt. But ever since Gata lost his leg, he became an insufferable character to me. Right out of the starting gate. Look, the guy's got a beautiful voice when he's sitting there in the bed singing. But he, as soon as he started doing that, it fucking grated on me. Like, fucking stop. If I was in the hospital bed next to you, I'd be smashing your face in right now. Like, shut the fuck up. It was very much just like a poor me kind of situation. And I really just didn't vibe with it at all. I just wish they would have given him more of like a redemption arc. Take your cues from like Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because something very similar happens. You have Nog, and Nog goes out to war and he loses his leg. And this kid goes through the entire spectrum, right? He goes through the shock of it, and then he brutes around and everybody's worried about him, whatever. Then he finally has his complete breakdown and he just has his complete mental break. And then after that, he comes back out on top again. It was such a good story for a character that really probably wasn't meant to be much on that show. And I feel like with Gata, they really should have done something with that. But we got like half that story with Gata, but it was like worse because of the insurrection. And then you're supposed to, feel bad for me because, or whatever. Not that he ever comes out and says, feel bad for me, but that's kind of like where it's kind of pulling you at. But you make a deal with the fucking devil, Tom Zarek. How are you going to feel after that shit? You know, are you going to feel safe after that? Probably not, right? Because mm-hmm. you think that you're doing something good. Like, we don't want to join the Cylons, so we're going to do this insurrection. It's like, dude, it's blood for blood at this point. How safe are you going to feel after Tom Zarek just had the entire Quorum murdered? And then Gata looks at him like, oh my God, wait, how can you do this? Like, what are you doing? It's like, motherfucker, what did you think was going to happen? You signed that shit. And now here you go. What did you think was going to fucking happen?
I think that I have more understanding for how Gata got to where he is. I think that some of it is the depression and everything that he's feeling from the loss of his leg. I think that some of it is the, you know, absolute betrayal he's feeling by Adama and all of them for wanting to align themselves with the Cylons. Mm-hmm. So I have understanding as to how he got to this point. And I even have understanding as to how he ended up allying himself with Zarek, because I think that Zarek, he's very gray, right? He always has been. But I do think that while he does have some ambition issues and whatnot, I do think that at the end of the day, he does have, in the way he perceives it, at least, the best interest of all the people. That's what he's working for. It's not entirely true, but I do believe that he believes that. Zarek, I mean, the moment in the insurrection where Gata lost me was when he's like going over the stuff on Adama's desk, mm-hmm. and then he still calls in for them mm-hmm. to execute Adama. Like that's where he really, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not okaying everything he did before that, but that was the moment that he really lost me, because in that moment it really seemed that he was going to make the opposite decision, and maybe it would be Zarek who ignored that and pressed to carry it out or whatever. But no, he quadrupled down, and that just seemed, it wasn't, maybe this is one of those rare instances where I feel like it just wasn't done well. If you're going to have Gata make that final decision, then don't give him this sappy scene where he's like pawing exactly. through Adama's things and seeing all these things that make Adama who he is, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, all of that said, Zarek killing all of the members of the Quorum was just, again, that was the moment where Zarek lost me. Not because I think the Quorum was super effective or that all of them were good people or anything, but
I couldn't stand them. I couldn't stand them from the beginning.
It's like, it's literally like, y'all don't agree with me? Well, how about murder?
Exactly.
Only murders in the Quorum room.
talk to the hand, but really the trigger finger, and you know, problem solved, guys. Guess what?
There were other things about the whole insurrection arc that were great in terms of like, holy shit, wow, great. Not like good things happening, but holy shit, when they tell Roslyn that Adama is dead, she just goes fucking scary. I mean, like, we've seen Roslyn piss before. We've seen her put her foot down. We have seen her be hardcore, but in that moment, it was the most human reaction I think she's ever had. Like, she set every politician part of her aside and was like, I'm gonna murder you all.
Yep.
And listen, please, at this point, do.
Yeah, at this point, yes, do.
But
it.
Yeah, I really love that because it also speaks to like the depth of her feelings for Adama, that she lost her decorum entirely in that moment. Again, rightfully so. Really great. And also, Mary McDonnell is fucking perfect in that scene. She looks so ill because she's supposed to look like she's dying from cancer and everything. She is still fucking scared. I saw something that apparently people thought that maybe there would be a Hail Mary for Gaeta, I think is what people are saying, that there would be a Hail Mary and he wouldn't get executed in the end. And I was like, really? I did not think that was going to happen. Gaeta's kind of he's already been on that chopping block. Now he's literally created this whole insurrection. How many people are dead because of him? Yeah, they're not going to just let him off the hook now because once upon a time he wasn't like this. This isn't the place we're at in this storyline, in this show.
No, and the thing is that in the end he ordered the execution of Adama. He could have just kept him in the brig and said, hey, just keep him in the brig and if I was going to do an insurrection and there was somebody like Adama there, I wouldn't kill him. I'd be like, no, keep him. I want him alive. Keep him in the brig. That way I can show them that I was right. Something like that. But you're just execute him. I was like, okay, Gaeta, you're dead.
Again, very, very ill-fated insurrection, but they almost pulled it off. Listen, if it weren't for fucking Butch and Sundance over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Starbuck and Lee and Starbuck, however you want to assign them role-wise. If it weren't for them, and also for Chief, what did he like crawled through every back door that Galactica has to shut off the FTL drive so they couldn't actually jump. If it weren't for the three of them, but mostly
Butch and Sundance over there, dude. Baby Adama coming out, blowing people away. It was like, nice.
And also, this is where Anders gets shot, which is how we get all that lovely exposition that we mentioned in our first top moment. Exactly.
We just had to give him a little smack so we can get the story. All right, next one. Top moment number 4 also features a multi-episode arc kicking off in sometimes a great notion and concluding, well, sort of in a way, in Islanded in a Stream of Stars. We'll take what the heck a Starbuck for 1,000, Ron. Dude. Starbuck discovers what is clearly her crashed Viper on Earth and the skeleton wearing her dog tag and the unrealistic hair that is still underneath that helmet. Okay. I'm pretty sure that would have burned. It looked like the rest of the body was pretty charred. Okay.
Maybe also, hair, I think, would have, there's no skin left, I don't think there really would have been much. Like, you could have maybe found a couple loose strands floating around, but. Other than that, that was a really great wig.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to theory craft here for a minute. She crash landed there before they nuked themselves. And there was just a kid there. And he was like, oh, look, I'm going to put this wig on this dead body. And it just happened to like stay on for the other 2000.
I think she only crash landed like 6 months ago or something.
Oh, well.
Supposedly, according to, you know, Ron Moore, who.
I really wish they would have like explained it a little more because, I mean, her ship fucking imploded. It wasn't like it crash landed or anything like that. It fucking imploded. We all saw it. But now it's kind of like it's damaged. The wing's not on it. You know, it's just the cockpit and it's sitting here on this planet. I'm like, I don't know, dude. That's when it got weird. I mean, I understood what they did.
Maybe
like,
the explosion is what some sort of different technology looks like when they go into like a sort of hyperdrive. I don't know. Listen, it's nonsensical. I have so many thoughts on this, but first let's talk about what happens in these actual episodes before I get into my fucking crazy, because I have some theory crafting and it's some fucking crazy theory crafting.
So obviously she's struggling with this throughout all of these episodes, but it really comes to a head when she gives those recovered dog tags to Boltar, who tests them and confirms the blood on them is from a dead person, and that dead person was definitely Starbuck. He calls her an angel and starts using her story as a way to preach eternal life and shit to his harem.
It's a lot more than that, because it is at the whole ceremony where they're going over the deaths of the people who died in the Hall Breach.
That's right. And Starbuck, just being Starbuck, slaps him and just walks away. I thought that was one of the coolest reactions Starbuck's had on this show, because generally she's very mouthy, and the way she did it and just slapped him and walked away was so real. It was very human. And it was like, wow, that's fucking good. Like, I don't know.
Like, I gave you these to do a thing, and now you're taking it to like a religion level. Not here for it, my dude. Okay, so this is going to take a minute because I got a lot to say here. I actually wrote a blog entry about this a million years ago. And by a million years ago, I mean like 15 years ago, 16 years ago. I know that Ron Moore has basically said that Starbuck was a super angel, aka an angel that people can both see and touch. At least back in the day, there were fans who insisted that she was a seraph, which were, I don't know, aliens maybe that existed in the original series. And they were described as wingless angels. I don't know why you have to say wingless. Like, just they were described as angels, whatever. But they could take on normal human form as needed. And I do kind of get why people would subscribe to this, because apparently these seraphs were supposed to feature heavily in the Galactica 1980 show that was canceled very quickly. A script was even written in which the original series Starbuck actually joined the Seraphs. However, Seraphs were described as a race of sentient beings who knew what they were and how they became what they were, while Kara Thrace Starbuck has no memory of the time period when she was missing and presumed dead, or when she died, whatever. Nor does she know who or what she is, at least still not at this point, right? Then there's the half Cylon theory, which, to be honest, I might still subscribe to a little bit, because to me, it seems super convenient that Ellen and Cavill in this set of episodes went on about the Daniel Cylon model that Cavill destroyed. Daniel, who had musical and artistic inclinations, who was Ellen's absolute fave. And how could she not have foreseen what Cavill would do to the model? And if she did foresee it, why would she not try to save, if not the original Daniel, then at least one of the copies? And Starbuck herself not only has some artistic inclinations, as we've seen over and over and over again, but also seems to have way more stamina than most, if not all, humans. She's constantly touted as being the best pilot in the fleet and possibly the best pilot ever. She has like amazingly short reaction times and almost extrasensory perception. She was able to essentially hotwire a Cylon raider on instinct alone. Not to mention the special interest the Cylon seemed to take in her, namely Leoben, but the hybrid as well, not to mention the nonsense in the breeding facility way earlier in the series. I'm not going to get into all of the details of this theory, and there are still tons of holes in it, but I've always liked it better than the whole basic. She's just a super angel.
Yeah, I didn't like the angel concept. I think what you're leaning on there, I think it was way better.
I think your dad's name even started with a D, just saying.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that, because I didn't know that. I thought that was really good. Yeah, it would have made more sense. And including the fact that I would have much preferred to be like half Cylon, because she's seeing this guy in the bar that nobody else sees. And that's like Cylon projection shit. So I was like, oh yeah, that would have been fucking cool. But maybe the guy was just a lesser angel and she can see him and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I could go basic and just agree, like, Ron Moore is the creator. He said she was a super angel. So I guess that's the thing we have to go with here. But also,
there's a difference in reaction to it, to where someone tells you something, you go, oh, okay. And then someone tells you something, you go, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. All right. I don't believe you, you know, but like, okay. I'm going to write my own story as soon as we're done here. So that's fine.
And honestly, that's what fanfic is. And maybe this is just my fanfic, but
exactly.
I also think that there are legitimate reasons to believe that she was half Cylon. Still, again, there's still tons of holes in this theory, right? Like, where did she resurrect, et cetera, whatever. But listen, I still like it better than the angel thing.
I'm with you on that.
All right. I think we're here, right? We finally have reached our last top moment for this particular set of episodes. One that you do see coming throughout this entire arc of despair, but which also culminates in Islanded in a Stream of Stars. And it is the Galactica's last gasp. Like, listen, the ship was old before. It was supposed to be a retired museum ship, okay? And it's been falling apart even faster since all of the bullshit with the fight to get people off New Caprica, for obvious reasons. But even when Adama reluctantly agrees to using Cylon tech in an attempt to fix her, it's very slow going. And then in her escape attempt, Boomer jumps her raptor too close to the Galactica and makes things even worse. So basically, Adama, despite railing against this until what seems to be the very moment he admits the Galactica is done for, has no choice but to try to come to terms with letting her go. And it's also a very big point of contention in his relationship with Roslyn, and even bigger with Hilo, because Hilo's like, oh my God, just fucking give up on this ship, dude. Like when he's wanting to take a raptor out by himself to try to go find Hera, who's been kidnapped, which we'll talk about a little more in a bit. But at the same time, it's like when she finds that, I mean, it doesn't even look like a crack. It literally looks like a tear in the universe, honestly.
Yep.
I mean that figuratively, but also kind of quite literally, because literally the show is Battlestar Galactica.
It's Battlestar Galactica.
It kind of is a tear in the universe. Yep. We knew it was bound to happen eventually, but I think you don't think it's going to happen in the timeline of the show. The Galactica is itself a hero of the story. The ship is a hero.
Exactly. Exactly. She is one of the main characters, except big, she's
big main
slowly.
Character energy.
I would like to do a shout out here for a minute that they did retract the landing pods in this episode, which we haven't seen since like the first season or some shit.
Yeah.
Because they did it and I was like, oh. And then when they were doing that, this episode, of course, I forgot. This is a point that I don't remember. I was like, oh, well, if they were still able to retract the landing pods, maybe she wouldn't get away. And then they're like, retract landing pods. I'm like, oh, shit, they still work. Why haven't you guys been using them? Like, what the fuck?
But I mean, the thing is, she is so set on getting away that even if she hadn't been able to slip out at the last second, the raptor still would have exploded on the inside of the, even if it, before she jumped, it would have hit the wall and exploded, and that would have caused even more damage. I will say that when she jumped, and this is about the Galactica, but I will say that I had to Google, does hot dog survive? to the end of the series, because he was like right there, like yelling right the warning, and he's like, no, don't do it, no, don't do it, and she doesn't, he's like right there, and I was like, oh shit, did he just die? Anyway, this is about the Galactica. This is about, let's calm down, this is not about hot dog, this is about
not about a hot dog. We're not talking about the main character here, we're talking about the secondary characters, okay? The Galactica falling apart was, I think, one of those depressing moments for me, right? Because she's been there from the beginning. She's literally the pride of the fleet. She's protected everybody for so long. And when they talk about these little cracks at first, it's like, oh, it's no problem. And then when the chief holds up that black light or whatever, and you see all the cracks and everything, all the fractures everywhere, and it's like, oh my God, this ship is not going to last at all. It's fucking done at this point.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like losing a main character, you know, in the series. I was certainly more sad about the Galactica than I was Gata. So look, if Gata died in season two, then I would have been more heartbroken about Gata, but I'm sorry, I didn't like the way he went out. So I was like, okay, fine.
I'll be honest. I think there are very few character deaths in this series. We will talk about one in a bit, but there are very few character deaths in this series that were or could be more depressing than losing this ship. Roslyn, Adama, Ty, there are definitely several characters, main characters, whose deaths would have been more depressing than losing this ship, but they didn't happen, especially at this point. It's like, my God. And we knew back when it was airing that it was close to the end of the show too. So things happen in the next set of episodes. She doesn't go completely yet, but just the whole realization that the old girl ain't going to make it.
It's the first realization that we had, right? That it was just like, it's coming to an end. This is going to end soon, right? I mean, at this point, we already knew that the end of the series was coming at this point.
Right, but still, this was the first tangible proof.
First tangible proof that like, oh, okay, the ship only has so many jumps at this point. It's Earth or bust at this point.
I mean, the fact that Adama is like, no, no Cylon tech, and then gives in to the Cylon tech. And I think that could have been a save if it weren't for Fucking boomer. Like, thanks, boomer. Again.
Okay, boomer.
But also, the last moments of episode 18, Islanded in a Stream of Stars, were Adama and Tyre just kind of just sitting back, drinking, talking about the death of their ship.
It was one of the coolest scenes, and really one of the like cooler arcs between Ty and Adama, right? Because the way this started off, he's like, oh, Adama treated him when he found out that he was a Cylon, treated him like shit, was fucking. He was really just provoking him to kill him, is what he was doing. He wanted to get killed. You know, Adama wanted to get killed, and he was provoking him to do that. But to see like how it turned around, and I feel like they were almost better friends after that. Yeah, that scene is just beautiful, you know, because in this whole arc, aside from it being the Arc of Despair, you know, it's the Arc of Despair because we had literally 3 or 4 Admiral Adama complete mental breakdowns in it, right? There was more mental breakdowns in these 9 episodes or 8 episodes than there was in the entire show. And he had breakdown after breakdown after breakdown. When he knows that they're trying to repair the galactic, and you see him grab like that gooey paint stuff and he's smacking it against the wall and like freaking it out. And he just sits there and starts crying. Like, what a great performer. But yeah, at the end, they're sitting on the couch drinking the booze and they're like, to the Galactica. And it was just like, dude, beautiful.
So I think we can talk about some insights now. Move on from depressing stuff to the first couple of things we're talking about is slightly less depressing stuff. These are insights that we've gleaned from being longtime fans, but because we're covering Battlestar Galactica specifically, I do refer to some of these as Dean sites because Dean, my partner, knows more about the series than I ever could, than we ever could, honestly. When I told him about the hot dog thing and our reactions to it, he was like, yeah, duh. And I was like, fuck me. Like, why didn't I talk to you about this beforehand?
That's fine, dude. That's fine. It was just like watching the series for the first time again. You guys can be all hidey tidy over there or whatever, and you don't think hot dog is funny, but us over here, we think fucking hot dog is fucking funny.
Exactly. But anyway, so he constantly points things out to me, and I long ago lost track of what I knew before I knew him. So we've got a few production type things that we wanted to talk about. And the first one I gave to you because I feel like we feel the same way about this.
1,000%. Yes. Apparently, even though Edward James Olmos and Ray McDonald insist that Adama and Rosalyn were physically intimate for a while, with their first time having been on New Caprica, Moore insists that their physical relationship didn't actually begin until we first see them in bed together in the episode A Disquiet Follows My Soul. But we're both with EDJ and Mary McDonald on this, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Because if you do remember, it happens a few times when old Eddie James Olmos is like, hey, so do you remember that day? Back on New Cat, what day? What did you guys do? Did you have a drink? Did you smoke weed? Or did you get intimate? Come on, dude. They were doing it. And it was wonderful. It was beautiful. It was a great time to celebrate at the time.
Right. Did you do those things? Did you do all of the above? I feel like you could and should have done all of the above and probably did. And I don't know why Moore insists that these late episodes were the first times they ever slept. Come on. Come on. Like, even the actors don't agree with you, dude. I'm like, sorry, exactly. Not sorry, but...
They did it. They were doing it. They were having fun. Everybody was having fun.
It wasn't necessarily, like, on a super regular basis. They both had a bunch of shit going on, but there's no fucking way they waited until now with everything we've seen between them. Didn't they say they loved each other in the last set of episodes? Really? Are we trying to be, like... super like waspy here that they're saying I love you before they slept together? Fuck that shit.
Come on, they were doing it. When two people like each other, they generally bone first before they say that they love each other or figure out that they love each other. That's just the nature of the beast. That's how the world is. Oh my god, the entire Christian community is going to throw me into a lake of fire very soon.
It's fine. Me too, just based on my fucking Instagram story. So next up, Aaron Douglas believed that Chief would have voted with the rest of the final five for the Cylons to leave Galactica and the humans behind. And also, I didn't know this, but apparently there was a live journal called Chief's Deck in which Aaron Douglas listed the reasons why Chief would have voted this way. But also, like, I was very active on Live Journal for some years, and I was fairly active still when this show was airing. How did I not know this existed? Also, I love that it was a fucking Live Journal. It's like George R.R. Martin refusing to leave Live Journal until it literally got taken over by Russian bots and he basically had no choice. I was cackling. I was heckling. The idea that the actor believed that Chief would have voted with the rest of the Final Five, I get it, because I know that he was still, Chief as a character was still struggling with the whole being a Cylon thing and everything. But also, yes, Adama only kind of reappointed him Chief out of basic need. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like Chief to me that he would have voted with the rest of them, especially after the shit that Boomer, I don't know. I can't remember timing wise exactly, but
if they would have at least just added the Chief's live journal on the show to get because that was actually one thing that was like, that doesn't really seem like the Chief, that he was like, oh yeah, we should go. I'm like, no, the Chief would never just leave like that. But if there was some reasoning behind it, maybe
in the show he voted against it, he didn't want to leave. But Aaron Douglas insists that he would have wanted to leave. And that's where I come in saying, but yes, if he had voted with them, we would have needed.
Yeah.
Listen, Baltar has his radio show. Why can't Chief have a blog today on the Galactica? And it's just like a techie blog where he talks about what he fixed. Now I want that. The internet existed back then. He would have been doing blog entries. Who would have been doing like vlogs? Who would have been on TikTok? Ellen absolutely would have been
on TikTok.
Ellen
would have easily been on TikTok.
She would have been like big problematic TikTok fame.
Yeah, exactly. Like putting the camera in fucking the Colonel's face all the time. He's just like, oh, Ellen with that phone. Roslyn, I don't like your TikToks.
Roslyn is, she's like the AOC Bernie Sanders, like amalgamation of politicians, where she's like on Insta, like talking shit about Zarek all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a different conversation that we need to have.
Yeah, dude.
So we're gonna let's go on to our last Dean site, because this is a whole other conversation.
Okay, so here's a cool one for the music buffs out there. For the piano playing in Someone to Watch Over Me, Bear McCree took multiple digital samples of every key on the piano they had in Joe's bar set, and they used a synthesizer program to exact the sound of the piano in that space on his computer. He then went through the episode frame by frame and replaced every note that was played, all so that he can keep the same exact sound for the music while not relinquishing dialogue volume.
Basically, what it was like, if they had recorded just them playing the piano and talking, there would have been issues with the volume, and they would have had to relinquish one or the other. So Bear McCreary actually went to the set, took multiple, basically he took every attack you could think of on every single one of those piano keys on that exact piano in that exact set, so that it would sound exactly like it should sound if they were playing that piano on that set. Programmed all of those sounds into his computer, and then frame by frame from the episode, tons of fucking work, replaced every note that is insane. That is a dedication to sound. The amount of work that must have been for Bear McCreary, just so that they could keep the way that exact piano sounds in that exact room.
The acoustics. They wanted the same acoustics.
Yeah, exactly. Just insane. Like this show, man. Sometimes it's always amazing, but sometimes the above and beyond is just fucking wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. It makes it so good.
So we're going to get into our personal insights, but I am going to preface, and I am being very, very serious here. I am prefacing our discussion of these insights with a very hardcore, serious content warning, because we will be talking about suicide, physical and sexual assault, child abuse, and miscarriage. This is all very dark, and I felt like for this especially, we needed to have a content warning. These are things like also that were super important to the set of episodes, but that I felt like did not need to go into the top five moments for obvious reasons. The first one being Dee's death. I mean, we've talked about this, but I've watched this series all the way through several times. I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times. I don't remember at this point, but even now I still cry every time this happens. I will say that in this particular instance, doing a little more research, apparently Candace McClure didn't agree with this particular end for Dee, and I can totally see why, because it didn't really, and I think this is part of why it hit so hard, is that it didn't really square, like you do not see it coming, because it doesn't really square with her being so hopeful for so long, even when she was on the Galactica during the Cylon occupation of New Caprica, for instance. I do get why she came to terms with this ending for her character. And I understand why Moore and the writers thought it was the proper ending, because I do understand that total loss of hope for anything more than just day by day survival and feeling like there's nowhere to go, nowhere else to go, nothing else to do from here. But I do have to say, I feel like it was very rushed. Maybe this should have happened not at the end of episode 11. I can't recall the exact title of the episode, but maybe it shouldn't have happened right at the end of episode 11, but during or after the insurrection, or when they realize the Galactica isn't salvageable. What are your thoughts on that? Because it took a bit for me to come to terms with it as an ending for her, but I do think in the end I felt that way, but I also think it was a little rushed.
It was rushed, but I kind of understood what they were trying to do. Like, everybody lost hope and everyone is showing it. And the people who don't show it are the ones who are more likely to do terrible things, because they don't cry for help. They suffer internally, and one day they wake up and they're just done. And that's just what happens. And Dee is not someone that we know a bit about her personality, but not so much about her. I feel like she's more of a closed off person. You know what I'm saying? She definitely comes off as somebody who would just kind of struggle on her own and not really say, hey, I need to talk to somebody, or like any of that stuff. And then she puts on this kind of facade that, oh no, I'm good, I'm surviving, like everything is totally fine, no problem. This is what happens to a lot of those people when they hit that point. They don't reach out. They don't say, hey, I need help. They don't do anything, you know? And at that point, she was done. And there's some people, when you're just fucking done, you're just done. That's it. It was definitely rushed. I feel like it was more of a shock factor they were going for.
Yep.
Because let's face facts, there isn't a lot of people who watch the show who don't like Dee. Dee was a fantastic character from start to finish. I loved fucking Dee from day one.
I think the worst thing you can feel about her is ambivalence.
Exactly.
You can't not like her. Sorry, sorry.
Yeah. I loved her the entire series. Like, I was just madly in love with her. And when they had to do her dirty like that, I was like, dude. But it was powerful though, right? Like, mm-hmm. It was super fucking powerful. It was a shock factor. But
I mean, the fact that even now, 15 plus years after this episode aired, I had to stop after that episode and just
breathe.
Because I think it happens not even quite at the very end of the episode. There's more stuff that happens after that. Mm-hmm. And I had to like take a pause, like a big pause. And when I say a big pause, I mean, I think it was like a day or two before I could get back to it. Because to be fair, it doesn't help that the world is on fire right now either. Literally on fire in more ways than one. So
exactly. It was hard. Her death was definitely probably one of the hardest, you know, in the entire show.
Yeah, I think even harder than like Starbucks. Like, yeah, we all hated mm-hmm. to lose Starbucks, but she went out kind of maybe. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like another character that was lost. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, because the thing is that Dee really survived everything. She killed herself. No one killed her. She didn't get murdered. She didn't blow up in a fucking ship or die in war or anything like that. She was just fucking done and was like, hey, you know what? I'm done. She just wanted to have one good night and just that was it.
And that's what she did. Like, she went and had a very good day and she was positive and she kissed Lee goodbye and everything. I will say, I don't know the phone number off the top of my hand, but please, 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 in real life, if anybody is feeling that sort of deep and dark, especially fucking right now, reach out to somebody. Don't feel like it's the end. Don't feel like it's all over. This is a fake universe and a fake person, but it is a very fucking serious thing. So call a suicide hotline, call a friend, text a friend, message a friend or family member, whatever. Please don't feel like there's nothing left. I mean, I don't want to say it can get better. There's always something, because all these like platitudes are bullshit. I've been there. I literally got to a point not quite 11 years ago where I realized that I was like at the end of my rope, and that if I didn't do something, I was going to do something. And I checked myself into a mental health facility. I went through an evaluation and they didn't actually, like, I didn't actually have to go inpatient. They felt that I wasn't quite in that much danger, but they did put me in an outpatient program. I got the help I needed. And so just, there is help, I promise you. Anyway, next up.
Ellen Tai and her apparent loss of all that growth she was exhibiting when she first resurrected, including growing Caprica 6 to the point where Caprica 6 is so upset she loses hers and Tai's baby. Yeah, I'm right there with
fucking
this.
Ellen, man.
She came out and it was like, wow, how great is this? She's all I don't know, seasoned. Like, she's just like, oh, wait a minute. She's not just this crazy fucking person, and just devolves right back into that fucking person. And it's like, fuck, maybe you're the one who should have been fucking boxed.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And like, my God, that awful about turn faux apology. It seemed like a faux apology to me when she realizes that Caprica is about to lose the baby. And she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for those guys.
Yeah.
She's way too old to be like a child influencer, but like, that's what it's
exactly. That's
like.
What she's doing. She's like, oh my God, was that me?
Drama.
Oh my gosh.
What did I do? She TFO with that shit.
It was disappointing to see that, because yes. The way she came out, you know, it was like, oh wow, she's like enlightened. It's like an enlightened Ellen, which is like, that's cool. I would have loved to have seen that. It didn't last long.
When she shows up on the Galactica and she sleeps with Ty, honestly, that's on him.
Yeah.
She doesn't know about Caprica at that point. That is on him. Big surprise. But then she finds out about Caprica and she's so mad because her and Ty could never conceive a baby. She makes it a point to cause fucking havoc and be awful. Just like she did when she was a human. I understand, okay, you want to show the flaws and everything, but you negated all of that. It's like waking up and being a sage because you have realized your mistakes and you want to fix everything and you want to be a part of something bigger again. And then you literally devolve right back into drama.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Ellen. And this is not a judgment on Kate Vernon or anything. Her ability to play the Ellen that we see waking up and realizing she's a Cylon, going through all that shit with Cavill, coming back to Galactica and just pretty much immediately devolving into what she was as a human. But also, my God, girl, little bit, guys.
Yeah, for real. Just for real.
I got one more insight. Okay, Boomer. AKA when Boomer, actual name Boomer, well, not actual name, but call sign Boomer, beats up Athena, tricks Hilo into having sex with her while Athena is beaten up and like tied up in a bathroom stall or whatever, to watch it.
Within plain sight. Yeah, within plain sight.
And then Boomer kidnaps Hera and subsequently abuses this child. It's okay because eventually they bond and like she like doesn't want to really hand Hera over to Cavill. And it's like, no, not okay. None of this is okay. I know Boomer went through a lot, but there's no justification.
No, this doesn't make sense. No.
It's bad. I don't like it, and it's bad.
It was very icky. Look, and another thing that just gets brushed under the rug. Why does no one ask how she got out? Nobody said anything. They're just like, oh, she got out. It's not like they think, oh, this other person, Boomer, is like, who's there? She just killed herself. With what? A fucking wrench? Because that's how she died. And there was no wrench in there for her to beat herself in the head until she fucking killed herself. And she's just lying here, which is kind of interesting in itself. Wow, a wrench. Who would have fucking beat her? Who's the only person visiting her in here? Who's the person who's pleading the case for her to the president? Who could have let her out? Like, everyone knew you did it, Chief. Everyone did. But the story is, it was passed over. If you wanted to get Hera for some reason, okay, we need Hera because of some Cylon whatever bullshit. Okay, great. That's fine. Kidnap the fucking baby. It's at fucking preschool. Go over there and just walk in there and get it.
You are literally the genetic
copy of
her mother.
No. But it's like, okay, Boomer, do your evil, right? She's like, no. I'm going to go beat the shit out of the other one. And then I'm going to put her in a closet right next to the floor where I'm going to sleep with her husband, rape her husband.
Okay, I will say this. I do not think that Boomer, she did not plan on this thing happening with Hilo. I'm not excusing what she did. I'm just saying it wasn't like premeditated. She didn't just follow through that. She like leaned into it, bro. Like,
leaned into it. She enjoyed it.
This is sexual assault. It's sexual assault. He thought you, think of it in real life terms. You're married to a twin, your wife's twin. Let's even pretend your wife's twin is like asleep or somewhere. Nothing bad happened to her. But like your wife's twin is like, I just feel like fucking my twin sister's husband. Gross, A. And also still sexual assault because they don't actually know who you are.
Yeah. And it was just.
Apparently, originally, the whole sex thing wasn't in the script and there was like a kiss and they were just making out. And then the network was like, well, couldn't you just go all the way? couldn't you just go all, like, why wouldn't you just go all the way? And they were like, yeah, okay, let's go all the way. And it was like, okay, well, but also we're on a cable network. We can't show nudity. So what's the best way to like show this is happening? Oh, well, yeah. Let's do it from the point of view of the beaten and tied up actual wife. Yeah. I'm like, literally bile is rising in my throat.
Yeah, it was like icky. Like I can't throw up in my mouth anymore today. It's a bit much, yes. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it was definitely a network stupid thing where it's like, guys, but we want to make sexual assault sexy. How can we do that? All right, guys.
I think like a kiss, even a little bit of making out could have been passed over. He still thinks this is his wife.
I honestly just thought it was going to be like a bait and switch. Like she's going to walk into the thing and say, hey, I need to pick up Hera. I'll be back in a bit. And then goes. And then it's like, hey, wait a minute. I just saw you. Didn't you just pick up Hera a little while ago? And it was like, no, I didn't. What are you talking about? And it was going to be like this kind of thing. But they went full all fucking out. Crazy.
For 2009? Or whatever, that was a lot. Like, I would expect this shit from a show today. I guess, like, oh, we're breaking boundaries or whatever, but not in the good way, guys. Not in the good way.
Yeah, and the way Boomer interacts with Hera was, like, oh, I felt God. Like was kind of out of character for her, honestly. I don't know.
Nah, she was like that. She was like that the last time they had Hera, though. All of the eights were, they were like, ugh, God, this kid, why is she crying? We look just like your mom, just behave.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like Boomer too, you know?
And the fact that she was like, here's a needle. I'm going to just put you to sleep. Maybe this is too much. Don't know how long it's going to like put you down for. It's like, instead of rubbing bourbon or whatever on your baby's gums when they're teething, you're just giving them a fucking glug. Log of bourbon. Yeah, like, I don't exactly. know.
What we don't know what's going to do to your liver, but you know, it's like, wait a minute. Isn't it your responsibility to get this child back safely? Or are you just trying to get the body back over there? What are you trying to do at this point?
And then it feels like trip? You're trying to forgive the whole thing because her and Hera eventually bond because they have like the, oh, you can see my secret vision place. Like, no, how about don't threaten a toddler? Christ. Yeah,
especially when you're taking her to the fucking Roach Motel. That's where you're going, you know? And it's like, dude, yeah, we're going to fucking bond, but there's going to be a great resolution to this one.
Listen, I just, and also, again, the idea that Boomer and like, what is this fucking Stockholm syndrome that they get to bond after Boomer is yelling and screaming at her and like, I'm going to fucking shut you up with drugs, child.
I know I abused you a little while ago, but I'm better now. I don't feel like abuse. Like
five minutes ago, I was going to drug you into oblivion. But like now we're cool because you can see my vision plate.
Yeah, I was just hangry. I just finished having some Cylon Sammies. I feel better now. I don't want to abuse you anymore. I'm not going to knock you out. That arc was exhausting. I'm just going to say that was
this whole yes.
Yeah, this, that was like,
and listen, like we've been here before. We've had dark sets of episodes, the dark,
but this was consistent.
Nothing good happened.
No.
Everything bad, everywhere bad, all at once bad.
Well, but hold on. Shout out to my girl, Laura Roslin, who hid her weed inside the book that Adama was reading to her. And she's like, wait a minute, turn to page 76. I'm fixing to get lit right now.
I think that's the only positive thing that came from this set of episodes. We finally got to see Roslin and Adama in bed together.
Yeah.
Top fucking notch, middle-aged couple. Before that was a thing that you actually got to see on television, in series, whatever. Like now it's I don't want to say super common, but it's definitely like more common. And like back then it was like, whoa, big romance on the show. Actually Adama and Roslin, guys. And this was the in our opinion, obviously, because we think they've been together. But they've been fucking, maybe not regularly.
They've been fucking since New Caprica, baby. Because in New Caprica, everybody be fucking, everybody. We just found a new home, and now we're gonna find some new kids. You know, like that.
Maybe not for them. They were a little too old for that then. Yeah. But yeah, that was the one like positive thing to come from this set of episodes. Obviously, them telling, like them lying to Roslin and saying that Adamo is dead. Her fucking visceral reaction was like, yes, queen. I mean, because at this point, she basically is a queen. Ain't nobody going to fucking replace her. They try. No. Like, even Lee is like, yeah, I'm acting president. I'm just doing acting this because you're too sick.
I love her so much, dude. When she had that freak out, man, it was just so good. And I was she is calling
down the fucking hounds of hell on these assholes, and they deserved it.
Yep. They deserve every minute of it.
Any other, any last thoughts from our Ark of Despair?
No, dude, I should have DoorDashed some weed tonight after this one, because this was a dark one, man. Yeah, we've gone through a lot of these because now we are coming close to the end of our series. Yeah, so it's been a wild ride. And this one was definitely the darkest hour before dawn. But it was dark.
The darkest hour before daybreak. Daybreak. Would you say? Ding. Oh, man. All right. As we close out the episode, we just want to thank you for joining us for our 11th Media That Made Us episode on the Ark of Despair. We'll be back on Wednesday, April 9th, to conclude our discussions of BSG Season 4. In the meantime, please do not forget to like, subscribe, or rate us 5 stars wherever you're watching or listening. And as always, please consider supporting us by backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.